work your right, burn your little candle day and night. You can shimmy till dawn to the pounding drums, but you best be ready when the horn one comes, yeah. Sound of a hunting horn, you dance a ring in the gathering storm. If the soap is tight, get your panties in a wad. Just the coming of the horn god, he will call you out, make you sweat, give you a blessing that you'll never forget. So revel in the chase and let your heartbeat run. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Hey. Hunter who tracks outside of time, guardian lord of ancient rhyme. Brother stag in the musky glen, consort of the goddess in the woodland den. We call you forth as we make our way, walking in your power every day. Guide us through in our hunt this night, maybe even later in the great rite. He will call you out, make you sweat, give you a blessing that you'll never forget. So revel in the chase and let your heartbeat run. Blessed are the children of the horned one.
Blessed are the children of the horned one.
Yeah. Wait to the sound of a hunting horn. If you dance a ring in the gathering storm. So revel in the chase and let your heartbeat run. When the horn one comes, he's gonna call you out, make you sweat, give you a blessing that you'll never forget. Revel in the chase and let your heartbeat run. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Blessed are the children of the horned one.
Learning what rebirth truly means. never ourselves, nor the fairies and elves. May we dance and ring bells for the coming of the spring. So pray to the spring, pray to all living things. Pray to the maiden and the joy that she brings. Pray to the earth, let all the creatures now sing. Hope is renewed with the coming of the spring. So open your heart to nature's wondrous art. Time now to start the healing of the green. Young rabbits abound, and there's flowers all around. The air is filled with the sound of the coming of the spring. So pray to the spring, pray to all living things. Pray to the maiden and the joy that she brings. Pray to the earth and all the creatures now sing. Hope is renewed with the coming of the spring.
Welcome to yet another episode of Tarot Talk on Woodwose Radio. Tonight, we're joined again by Joy, and we're going to be talking tonight about the sevens of the four suits. We're going to be talking about death and temperance. So hopefully you've got your cards handy. We're going to be taking a look at those, talking them over. And second hour, we're going to be doing a bunch of readings. We've already got a couple of them lined up. So, welcome again, Joy. Glad to have you again, and looking forward to tonight.
Oh, well, as far as I know, y'all are going to have me for every single week. I mean, okay.
Exactly.
Well, apparently the show has decided to take off, so that's great. So I figured now would be a good time to refamiliarize everybody with what this show's about. My name is Joy. I am a pagan priestess in the Sayax Wiccan tradition. I'm also an ordained minister with the Universal Life Church. I have been doing tarot for the last 20 years. I was taught how to do all of this by my significant other, Mary, who you'll hear me mentioning quite a number of times. And she's taught a number of other people as well, so this was really great. Brian asked me to do this show through a website called Tumblr. And I thought, why not? You know, I enjoy teaching and I enjoy the tarot, so we can do this. I had hoped that it would take off, and it looks like it is, so this is a great thing. I use a variety of decks, but the main one that I go to for the most part is the Robin Wood Tarot deck. Illustrated by Robin Wood, who is a wonderful artist. If you've never seen any of her work, please go take a look at it. She did the illustrated guide to Pern for Anne McCaffrey. She's done this tarot deck. She's done paintings for the cover of Dragon magazine and other fantasy works. She's a really, really nice lady. She's got fibromyalgia, so unfortunately she doesn't do much artwork anymore. And she's very approachable, and she's also a pagan priestess, so that helps when you're doing a tarot deck. The Robin Wood deck itself has been out for a number of years. I know of at least 16 years continuously. It's probably older than that. She also wrote a big book to go along with her deck, interpreting it and giving additional information on each of the cards, little subtle things that you may not see when you just look at the card, but when you look at, you know, the huge poster-sized painting that she did, would stand out. Let's see, what else can I say? I do have a website. It is aaronsjournal.com. That's all one word, no apostrophe. You can also get there through davinsjournal.com. It just recently underwent a huge facelift and name change, so you may want to be aware of that. And the format of the show is basically this. For the first hour, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about two of the major arcana cards, and then four of the pip cards, the minor arcana. Tonight's is, as Brian said, the Death card, which is number 13, and the Temperance card, which is number 14 of the major arcana. And then the Sevens of Cups, Swords, Wands, and Pentacles in the Minor Arcana. So, let's see. Brian, can you think of anything else?
Well, I mean, basically, you won't hear me talk too much because I'm sort of a tarot hobbyist, but I've basically lately have been collecting decks mostly for the artwork. I personally am I own the Robin Wood Tarot, but I also have numerous decks done by Will Worthington, including the Druidcraft Tarot, so that one is a really beautiful deck as well. Again, similar to the Robin Wood deck, you're dealing with symbolism and themes that are related to the Rider-Waite deck, which has kind of become the standard of the last, I don't know, however long it's existed. So, you know, if you're new to tarot, Rider-Waite or any of the variety of decks that are based on it would be a great start. There are other decks that are really beautiful art-wise, but quite difficult for a new reader to get used to. So there's one deck that, I mean, I'm kind of growing in my interest in the artwork, but it's not a deck that I really feel drawn to, and that would be the Thoth deck. There's a few differences. You know, some people consider it a bit of a darker deck. There's extra cards in it compared to your average tarot as well. So if you're new to the tarot, get out there, check out some decks, and, you know, check out our earlier shows for information on how to choose a deck, how to work with it, and so on.
Yeah, there's multiple hours of us talking to each other about decks and what to do and how to read and putting together a reading. So if you have any questions amongst a lot of that stuff, go back and download those other episodes. Take a listen to them. They're chock full of information. I need to download everything from 3 to now because I was going to put them up on my website so that they were available also, just in case something happened to Blog Talk. But anyway, okay, so we've wasted enough time, so let's go ahead and get into the cards for tonight. The Death card. The Death card is one of those cards that seems to freak everybody out when they see it, and it's probably one of the most misunderstood cards that's out there. I've mentioned this in several other shows that the death card is not as fearsome as everybody seems to think it is, and it certainly doesn't mean death. What it means, in basic, is a change in state from one form to another. Okay. Now, if you look at this from a pagan perspective or even a Christian perspective, because Elphas Levi is the guy that came up with most of the associations for the tarot decks, and as he was a Christian monk, before he was defrocked and excommunicated, he put a whole lot of Christian symbolism in there. So if we take a look at death from the perspective of a Christian minister, let's think about one of the greatest death scenes ever, and that's Jesus' crucifixion. Well, Jesus died there, but he didn't stay dead. So death is a reflection of partially of the resurrection, but more than that, it's a natural progression from one state to another. Okay, Christian mythology and, in a lot of cases, pagan mythology are pretty parallel in what happens after you die. I mean, we go from living and walking around here in meat sacks and bumping into each other and, you know, stepping on toes and saying, hi, how are you? And then the body ceases to function, okay? Both pagan and Christian and Hindu and a lot of other faith paths out there state that a part of us separates from the body, okay? It is, be it the soul, be it the spirit, be it the Akasha, or whatever you want to classify it as, the energetic portion of us that makes us us, that is not the body, separates from the body, which has ceased to function, and goes someplace else to dwell with the gods, to be part of nirvana, to associate with Jesus and the Holy Ghost and, you know, run around with a sheet over his head or whatever. But every single faith path says that we continue on, okay? So in this case, the death card is relating to a death from one state, which would be the death of the body, and the continuation of yourself in another form. And that is the basic interpretation of this card. It is a transformation from how you are now to how you become based on the factors in your life as going on, okay? Because the one thing about death is that nobody gets out of life alive, period. Nobody ever has, nobody ever will, unless you, you know, believe the story of Elijah and Elisha, where they were transformed straight to heaven without going through a physical death. But when you talk about the death card, it is an ending of one state to another. I mean, another example of it, and I've used this multiple times, is the transformation of a caterpillar. Okay, you have the caterpillar, he's climbing around on the roots, he's eating the leaves, he's doing his little caterpillar thing, he's laying eggs or whatever, okay? And then he goes into a state where, to the caterpillar, he's died. He's all wrapped up in his own spit and silk and whatever else. He's hanging there, you know, vulnerable as anything. And then later he bursts out of this cocoon as a beautiful butterfly. Okay, well, that's great. But to the caterpillar, he's dead. He just died. Now, to the butterfly, it's a metamorphosis from one state to another, which is, you know, the death card. It's something that it's one of the reasons why I love seeing this card, but I hate the misinterpretation that everybody gives it. Everybody sees the hooded guy with the big scythe and thinks, oh my God, the Grim Reaper, he's going to come along and kill us. Well, yeah, he does reap lives. But you know what? He reaps the physical body. The soul goes on. Okay, so let's see. And I think it would be appropriate to state that death is usually related as number 13, which is also probably one of the reasons that we have triskaidectaphobia, which is fear of the number 13. The figure in this card in the Robin Wood deck is sexless. You can't really tell what sex it is, male or female. There's red for blood in the cloak. Big black banner with a white rose on it. And I know that's significant, but I couldn't tell you why unless I pull out the book. So let me look at that real quick and see what's going on there. Oh, and if y'all hear me choking or trying to take a drink or something, be patient because I'm coming down with the flu apparently and I've got a sore throat right now. Let's see. Hold the flag showing a white rose on a black field. The white rose is the symbol of freedom and rebirth, and the black field is mystery and the unknown. So the seeker will find freedom and rebirth by going through the unknown and following the path he is now shown. All right. So that's pretty much the death card. I mean, it's a very easy card to relate to. When you get into the reversed meaning of it, typically what you start winding up with is the meanings that it's a natural progression again, but it's a destructive progression also. It's lethargy. It's great inertia, slow or ponderous change, depression, resisting the inevitable. Okay, so yes, the transformation of the caterpillar to the butterfly is going to happen. It is part of nature. It is how nature has designed the caterpillar to operate. Yes, it's traumatic for the caterpillar. Yes, the caterpillar is probably going to resist it. Okay, but it's not something that can be changed. And it's not something that can be put off. It's going to happen. So, you know, the caterpillar's best bet is to just go, okay, well, this is going to happen. Let's go on. and, you know, it's something that everybody needs to come to. So when you see it reversed in a reading, that's typically what that means. Let's see. What else have we got? I'm going through my other decks here to see what other items we have. I love the Rider-Waite symbolism for the death card. It's the pale rider on the pale horse from Revelations. So that's great. Let's see. Oh, now this is interesting. In the Whimsical Tarot by Dorothy Morrison, the death card is Sleeping Beauty. So that's pretty cool. Let's see. And the Druidcraft Tarot, we have the crone with her sickle holding, I guess, Yorick's head, but
Yes, that's precisely it. Well, yeah. I think in that particular depiction, what the skull is representing is the Celtic belief that the soul resides in the head. So it's kind of symbolic of the sort of transition of the soul from one state of being to another.
Once again, as in all the other interpretations. Okay, and let's see. Hello Kitty is just a cutesy bunny on a horse with a scythe. So.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah. I mean, it's really mouth-sickeningly sweet. I find it interesting that the pagan tarot, it's an initiation. And it's an initiate being blindfolded by the elders in the coven. And look at that. There's a symbolism of a butterfly there.
That actually does make a lot of sense.
Because, you know, an initiation is a change in state from one to another. You are literally being reborn into the group as a member of the family. This is great. The Housewives Tarot has the death card being a jar of mayonnaise that's been laying sitting out, and it says Salmonella on the label.
All right.
Now think about this imagery for a second and what we've been saying about the death card. It is an inevitable change from one state to another. Mayonnaise left out does what? It spoils.
Ferments, basically.
It turns into poison. It turns into salmonella. So, you know, a rotted jar of mayonnaise sitting out is perfectly symbolic, in my opinion. This is great, actually. And let's see.
I think it's important to realize that the death card can represent, like, it's always a symbol of major transformation from one state to another, but it has both positive sort of significance in the sense of like marriage and the beginning of new things, you know, something positive happening, but it also can represent like divorce or the end of a relationship or, you know, different things like that.
Exactly.
And actually there's a note here that says it could represent the shedding of outmoded attitudes. And I guess that would be if the card appears in the, you know, in the reading with other cards that sort of indicate that.
Also remember, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No worries.
But, my brain just locked. You were talking and I came up with another thought. Oh, the death card is an inevitable change, but it's also one that is gradual. It is one that you can see coming. It's one that is happening because of what has gone before. It is not a traumatic, shattering change. That's the Tower, and we're going to talk about that later. Okay, so it's very important to keep that distinction there, because you're rarely going to see the Death card coming up saying that this is an all of a sudden life-changing, oh my God, the world is falling in, change. This one is one that has all of time and all of nature behind it, because this is the logical conclusion to what has gone before.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. You got anything else, Brian?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Then we're going to move on to Temperance. Temperance is number 14. In the Robin Wood deck, it shows an angel with the big golden wings, standing with one foot in the water and one foot on the land, juggling some balls. Temperance and the mnemonic for temperance is moderation in all things, including moderation. Okay, temperance is being moderate. Temperance is doing what you are supposed to be doing. Okay, Temperance is not sacrificing everything that you enjoy simply to be a good person. It is being cognizant of what you are doing and why you are doing it. It's being honest with yourself more than anything else. It's showing that you can be patient when needed, that you can do things that people around you expect you to do when needed. But it also is a time when you can go wild and go out and drink to excess if you feel like it. There was a story that I remember reading while I was reading about Shambhala, where it was talking about some of the Buddhist monks. There was one celebration that would happen every year where the monks themselves would go out and just get shit-faced, plastered, drunk, singing, falling down, just everything. And the person that was there that was observing this was, like, shocked to see all of these sober Buddhists, you know, just going nuts, essentially. And the next day he asked one of the senior monks there why. And the monk in charge was like, you know, yes, we are moderate in all things, but especially moderate in moderation. You know, so there's a time and a place for everything. There's time to get drunk. There's times to have fun. There's times to be patient and do the meditations and work yourself to get what you need to do. Okay, but don't take it to an excess. don't take it to a point where you feel that, you know, it's all work and no play and Jack is now a dull boy. Let's see. One foot on the land to show that he's firmly grounded in reality and the seen consensual universe. The other foot's in the water to show that he is also established in the unconscious, instinctive, and intuitive universe. This statement out of the book is fairly significant, mainly due to the fact that you can have both. You can be both. You can, with some practice, not only exist in the material world, but also in the spiritual world. Okay, I don't know the religion of the people that are listening to this podcast right now. I'm going to assume most of you are at least familiar with pagan religions, and, you know, with Christianity. There are all kinds of people out there who can focus and who can be in both worlds at the same time. It's not an all-the-time state. It's not something that you want to do all the time. Most of the time, it's one or the other. It is either the physical or the spiritual. And once again, there's a time and place for everything. But it is also possible to do both at the same time. It's hard. It takes practice. But it can be done. And it does feel like you're having to juggle a lot of aspects of your life. There was a book called Sacred Ground that is a fiction book by Mercedes Lackey, where a medicine man of the Osage tribe is teaching his granddaughter to be a medicine woman. And he's frustrated because she is trying to control everything and all aspects of her life, and she's trying to advance because it's time to advance. And he thinks about how when he was growing up, at this time in his life, he was trying to be both spiritual and mundane and have a job and dodge Japanese Zeros on the ground while he was in World War II. And how when he came to realize, when it felt like he was juggling knives all the time and the slightest slip, he was going to just be devastated. And then he finally came to the realization that the knives will juggle themselves as long as you trust them to do so. And that's the key. And that was a very significant statement to me. The spiritual world will always be there. It will always be operating. You are always going to have a connection to it. It is never going to go away. You have to trust enough in your spiritual connection to trust that the spiritual world is not going to lead you astray, and it is not going to demand more attention than you can give to it. What it is going to do is the spiritual world, the spirit world, the angels and the guides and deities and Devi and everything that is out there are there to help you. They are not your slaves. They are not there to exclusively help you and do nothing else. They are not to do your work for you. But when you need it, it is another resource that you can pull on to help you in your life. And that's another lesson that temperance shows us. Okay? Brian, do you have anything?
I'm just thinking about sort of the kind of significance that it kind of represents, sort of alchemical ideas of the blending of what in Gnosticism are referred to as the two waters of the cerebrospinal fluid and the quote sexual waters, as far as raising the kundalini and creating that balance that allows you to harness your vital energy for the process involved in more advanced work in alchemy and tantra, actually. Now,
we were talking about that a little bit before the show, about the alchemical relationship with it.
I mean, there's mention in one book that I happen to have that talks about it representing a balanced expression of sexuality. You know, I mean, it goes into even more sort of modern day themes that, you know, aren't really talked about in like Eden Gray's book or what have you, as far as like interracial harmony and looking at people without regard to race, color, and creed and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Interesting. The pagan tarot has a picture of a lady who is obviously at work, computer's there, she's typing on it, but she has a statue of the goddess and a huge picture of a pentagram on the wall behind her. So once again, it's the blending of the two worlds. And it says that the reversed meaning of temperance is competitive interests, too much caution, hostility, a person with whom it is impossible to work, and misunderstanding others. I guess also that the temperance card can also be put yourself in someone else's shoes. Try to understand where they're coming from as part of this. The whimsical tarot has temperance as being Jack and Jill, falling down the hill and... you know, breaking their crown, actually. Let's see. The Druidcraft Tarot. What is that? That is a witch lady doing a potion spell during the daytime, and you can see a rainbow in the background outside the door. That's interesting.
Well, in that deck, I mean, the card is called the Feralt, and when you're dealing in, like, if you happen to be a member of the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids, the coursework
deck.
Well, exactly. I mean, like, I think it's the Cargoms that actually wrote the, and Stephanie Cargom wrote the material for it, but it actually draws on, like, alchemical themes that would be represented in like Masonic teachings, in Hermetic teachings, you know, in various other Gnostic and alchemical traditions, you know, and again that sort of is dealing with the mixing of the two waters that I mentioned earlier. Apparently the rainbow is connecting, I think it's Glastonbury Tor and the Chalice Hill or something like that. So it's again kind of a union of the waters or union of symbolism, something or other.
Sorry, I've only got the deck here. One of the things that I've mentioned in a previous show is for my electronic decks, I use a program called the Orphalese Tarot. It's a free program now, but there was a time when there were other decks that you could download for this particular program to use to read with. And what people would do is they would go out and buy the decks, they would scan in the various artwork, and then make it available through this program to other people that read with. So that you could switch back and forth between decks and get various additional interpretations to a spread that you do in this. I've got the Druidcraft Tarot, but it's only the artwork. It's none of the commentary. It's not even the little booklet that came with it. So I'm probably going to have to buy a copy of the book and type it in there myself. I've also got the Pagan Tarot here and the Celtic Tarot and several others. Many of these decks I actually do own physical copies of. This just sort of compiles them all in one place. The Temperance deck, the Temperance card in, it's the Llewellyn Tarot, has the woman at the well, who's pouring the water into the well, blending it together. And the Llewellyn Tarot for death is Arwen, the gentleman who is considered the god of death for the Celts, at least the Welsh Celts, which is kind of an interesting story if you want to go study that, and we'll talk about that some other time. In the Housewives Tarot, Temperance is, this is cute, this is a mixer with boxes of, one says joy, and one says one box says sorrow, one says justice, another says instant anger on it, and they're all getting mixed together by this blender to make a cake or some sort of thing, which is another interesting representation. The Housewives Tarot is a wonderful deck. If you like 50s kitsch, the Housewives Tarot is what you want to get, because it is kitschy. The back of the card looks like it's from one of those vinyl tablecloths that they used to have.
Of course.
It's great. I love it to death. I got a review copy of it, and it comes in a box that looks like it's recipe cards, and it actually has dividers that have recipes on them.
Which is
great.
God.
Okay.
That is hilarious.
It is. It's great. I love the deck to death. It's a little hard to read because the symbols are very specific. Once again, if you're going to, you know, start reading for your friends or for a profit or whatever, learn the cards as well as you possibly can, the standard symbolizations, because when you start dealing with specialty decks like the Housewives Tarot, you get the same symbolism, but it's a lot of times very hidden. So you don't it doesn't necessarily jump out at you. I mean, we've been talking about the Death card, and we've been talking about, you know, what it means and how it represents and what's going on. But looking at a jar of mayonnaise in a deck is not necessarily going to say the same thing as looking at a pale rider on a white horse with a scythe. Okay? But it means exactly the same thing when you actually stop and think about it. But until you have that association down cold, you're not going to see that symbolism in that card until you actually consciously think about it. Okay? And when you're doing a reading for a friend, you don't want to stop and go, what does that mean? And then, you know, be fumbling through books and stuff trying to figure out what the card means. That, you know, especially if you're doing that for money. I don't know about you, but when I'm doing something for any kind of recompense or remuneration, I want to be as professional as I possibly can, simply due to the fact that this is somebody's energy that they have gone out, they have put out into the universe, they got the money for, and then they're sitting down and they're giving you that money, which represents their work. And so it's, you know, simply courteous on my part to give them the best reading I possibly can and to be as professional in response. You know?
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, if you're new to the tarot, there are plenty of places where you can practice. I mean, if you've got friends who are willing to sit down and put up with you flipping through the book for a while, go for it. If it comes around Halloween Samhain time, by all means, if you know people who are throwing parties and you want to practice, ask them if you can sit in on the party and, you know, do readings for people. And I was actually just flipping through the cards in the Wildwood Tarot. And, I mean, the quote, death and temperance cards are called, respectively, The Journey, and it's basically a bunch of ravens, one of which is tearing flesh off of a stag skull, and the so-called temperance card is called Balance, and it has two, like, dragon-like serpents twining up a birch tree. I mean, this is an extraordinary step away from, like, your mainstream symbolism, but it is absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the major arcana for tonight. And I'm sorry I don't participate in the chat room as much as I should. I just saw a question asked by one of the ladies that was in there for my website again. That is erinsjournal.com, erinsjournal.com. Sorry, I just saw this because I'm focused on the cards and trying to interpret those, and so I kind of rely on Brian to do the chat room thing when I'm giving my interpretations and pontificating, as it were. Okay, so on to the sevens tonight. If you would lay them out so that we can take a look at all of them. As a standard for what I'm teaching, most people teach the suits, and they teach each suit, one card in each suit, and then they go on to the next suit. So you get the ace, two, three, four of pentacles, all the way down to the queen, king, and then they start again with the ace of swords, and then the two of swords, and then on down. It's become somewhat of a different way to teach lately, but I'm seeing it more and more, thankfully, is to teach a cross. Instead of teaching each of the suits and what they mean, is to teach the meanings of the numbers across the suits, because they relate to each other horizontally as well as vertically. Vertically is, of course, by suit. Horizontally is by number and type of card. And in some cases, they relate to themselves as well, as in tonight's case. The Seven of Pentacles has a gentleman that is standing amongst a whole bunch of plants, and each of the plants has this pentagram in it, which represents a harvest of money. You've put in the work, and now you're waiting for time to bring you the rewards, essentially. The Seven of Swords has a gentleman who is climbing over a wall. He has five swords in his arms. He's shrouded in a dark cloak, and he's leaving two swords behind, which is a partial escape. And in this case, it's basically he's a thief in the night getting away with most of the goods, but not all of them. The Seven of Cups in the Robin Wood deck has a lady who is daydreaming, and her hair has turned into a bunch of clouds behind her, and in the clouds are seven cups, each filled with a different item. And this is dreaming to no purpose, so many dreams you don't know what to do. The Seven of Rods is a gentleman in a cloak who looks like a Highland warrior, who has one staff in his hand, and he's facing down what appear to be six other opponents, also with staves in their hands. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about these also, but I want you to go through your deck, and I want you to also pull out the fives of each of these, because these relate directly to each other, the fives and the sevens. In each of these, the sevens here represent something that is unfulfilled, okay? In some cases, it's because you're waiting on something else. In another case, it's because the combat hasn't started yet. In the Cups case, it's because you just haven't gotten off your butt and started doing it yet. But in each one of these, it is a section of the process that you're going through, okay? The Seven of Pentacles, like I said, is the gentleman waiting for his harvest. Okay, he's done the work. He's put in the time. Now it's up to the plants to grow. It's up to the sun and the rain to do their things for the photosynthesis and to nourish the plant and to bring it along. And unfortunately, there's absolutely nothing that he can do to speed this process up. All he can do is wait. He can help it along a little bit by, you know, getting rid of the weeds and things like that so that the plants aren't choked out. But he's not going to be able to speed it up at all. He's got to wait. If you've got the fives out, the Five of Pentacles is them outside of a church waiting for somebody to come help them, okay? But as you can see, the seven is a continuation of that. They're outside of the church, they're destitute, but now they've put in some effort and energy, and the harvest is coming, but it is going to take time. With the Seven of Swords, you've got the guy sneaking away through the night. He's leaving some behind because he can't carry it all. It's too much for him. But once again, he's, you know, stealing it. He's taking it away. He's taking it from somebody else, and he's, you know, probably betraying somebody to do this. And in this case, the Five of Swords relates directly to it because it's another continuation of it. The Five of Swords is the nyan-nyan-nyan-nyan-nyan-nyan card where he's gloating and making fun of these other people that are leaving because he's got it all and he's running off with it. Well, now he's sneaking out and taking it because they're guarding what they have now. Specifically because of what came before. He made fun of them, and now he's got to pay the price and sneak it out and be a thief in the night. The Seven of Cups. The Seven of Cups I love. It is the dreamer. It's somebody that is daydreaming so much and has so many plans, and it's the if card. If I had $1 million, I could do this, this, and this, and this. If I had a better job, I could get money, and I could do this, this, this. If I had a romance in my life, I could get this, 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 and this. If I had this talent, I could sing on stage and be famous and get this, this, and this. But in every case, it's if. It's not doing it. It is sitting around dreaming about it. In the Five of Cups, which relates directly to this, he's so focused on what he's lost that he can't see what he still has. The Seven of Cups is the continuation of that. They're so focused on other things that they aren't getting off their butt to actually move forward with plans to get what they want in their life. The Seven of Rods. The Seven of Rods, I always, you know, relate it to the Highland Hero, but it's success against obstacles and problems solved without turning aside. Okay, you've got a guy, he's standing by himself, he's on the cliff edge, he's fighting the unknown assailants, okay? But when you look at the Five of Wands, which is like two cards earlier, you have five brothers, each with wands, and they're fighting amongst each other, okay? Well, I see this one as a continuation of that. They have, you know, jumped all over each other, they've hit each other with staffs, and now he's the guy that's standing on top of the hill. He's king of the hill and going, come and get me. Okay? He has become victorious against those obstacles. And now he's still struggling and still fighting, but he's not giving up. Okay? This the time of respite between the initial blows of the battle and when everybody gets really serious and really starts fighting hard for what they want. You know how there's usually a little pause in there where everybody sort of falls back and regroups and then they come after you again? That's what the Seven of Wands is, okay?
And I'm kind of thinking that it sort of represents a maturation of like, because in the Five of Wands, we said that this was kind of an exertion of energy just for the sake of it. You know, this, on the other hand, in the Seven of Wands, sort of, you know, it's sort of a almost a conservative use of the energy. Now that he's reached a certain point, he's standing his ground instead of just, you know, whipping the sort, you know, the staff around, trying to kick everyone's asses. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of matured from just the battle for the sake of, you know, kicking it, you know, into now that I have this, I'm going to make a more determined effort to, you know, hold my ground and, you know, keep things the way they are.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's another, you know, that's another thing to keep in mind. Typically, okay, as I said, I'm flipping through the various decks that I've got. Normally what you wind up having is the same symbolism over and over and over with the minor arcana. Because the minor arcana are very concerned with earthly matters. They tend to be very focused on here and now. The major arcana, as a contrast, tend to be very archetypical and very spiritual in nature and very focused on black and white situations. The minor arcana are very here and now. So the symbolism that you're going to find between the decks in the minor arcana doesn't really change that much. Every Seven of Cups means the dreamer who's looking off into the sky and not focused on what they're doing, and so many choices that you can't make a choice. And that's going to be, and as I'm going through these decks, I'm seeing that in every single deck. None of this changes. It's the same symbolism, same meanings, almost identical artwork in some cases. Especially
yeah, definitely.
let's see. About the only ones that are different are the Llewellyn Tarot, but once again, that's, you can still see the same symbolism, and the Housewives Tarot, because they change it up just a little bit. In the Seven of Pentacles, she's out in a garden, watering her flowers, which are seven pentacles. Seven of Swords is three ladies talking about five steak knives while she's standing behind them with two big steak knives, looking like she's going to stab them. Seven of Cups isn't so much her daydreaming as her trying to figure out which drink she wants to have, a Mai Tai or a iced tea or whatever. And the Seven Wands is seven toothbrushes around a toilet. So that one is a little okay.
Yeah, that's kind of the way it is for me with the Wildwood Tarot, because, I mean, it's got seven bows, and six of them are unfinished and leaning against a tree, and the other is finished but not strung. It's like, all right. That's not something easily directly interpreted if you haven't studied the book.
Let's see. So, let me see. Sorry, flipping through these quick and trying to keep my cat off the phone here. Because I'm sure you don't want to hear her opinions.
And another thing I think is interesting, too, is that for the Seven of... I mean, in the Wildwood Tarot, it's Seven of Stones, but the Seven of Pentacles in that deck is called Healing, and it shows a green woman, a healer, healing a soldier who's been injured in battle. And it, I don't know, I mean, it's sort of a variation or a derivation.
Deviation
is the word. That's the one. From the typical themes of harvest and like plant life. I mean,
but once again, it's, you know, something that's got to be solved by time, because healing takes time.
This is true.
And looking at the Hello Kitty deck, this is interesting. The Seven of Wands is a hockey goalie facing down six people that are coming at him, which is perfect. I mean, that's absolutely perfect. The Seven of Cups is a little frog character with bunches of cups and things coming out of it, and he's shocked. Let's see. And when you look at the symbolism between the fives and the sevens in the Hello Kitty deck, it's obvious because it's the exact same theme on each of these. It's really cool. Anyway, let's see, what else have we got? Okay, the Celtic Tarot, not so much. Okay, anyway.
We have reached into the second hour. If you want to start considering readings.
Yep. So, yeah, let me get my cards all collected up. Maybe play something for us to listen to while we take a break and get, you know, something, wet our whistles and, you know, have them figure out their questions or whatever.
Indeed. Yeah, so I guess I'll play a song and give us a few minutes to sort of find our drinks and whatnot. How about some Isaac Bonowitz?
That works.
Hymn to the Doida.
Oh.
Hear us, God, God Father, answer us, O Supreme Knower. Sing now the poets to praise your name. Turn again unto your people. That burns within the royal heart, or an outcast hovel, the sacrificial fire as well, the giver and the gift that's given. You are the heat of a warrior bold, when fighting for the tribe's survival, the fiery passion of our life, the holy spark of life renewing. Seasons round, you're called gift on in day.
Easter
being bound up by the situation, okay? So be very, very careful. Make sure that you've crossed all your T's and dotted all the I's and that everything is the way it should be or else you could get into a bad situation, okay?
What does that mean, bad situation? I have a realtor.
Oh, okay.
It's all going through a realtor, and the date for the closing is on the 8th.
Oh.
And we've been doing the contract back and forth, and so we're just waiting on one more, the appraisal to come in at a certain value, and if it does, then he is the one to buy it, and if it comes under, we're not taking him.
Okay. All right.
So that's the power is back in my hands, my husband and I's hands. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was kind of thinking, if for some reason this guy doesn't end up getting the house, do you practice any particular spiritual path? Because I'm getting this sense that maybe what might help bring buyers in or, you know, might clinch kind of the deal would be to do kind of a cleansing of the house, like a house blessing kind of a thing.
I do that with my sage. I mean, he's just been here for 2 weeks, and he just suddenly saw the house. He said, I want that house. And he has his contractors come, and the window people come, and it's the lawyer. It's his freaking lawyer that just keeps throwing loopholes into his life. But I think the way he wants everything, he's creative, and he's artistic like me, and I like him a lot. I like his energy, and I'm not going to be living far away.
Well, that's wonderful. One thing I can say is his lawyer, unless he's got some sort of power of attorney over this guy, doesn't have much of a say. I mean, if the guy wants
Correct.
The house and you want to sell the house to him,
Correct.
Then
I believe
the lawyer
that.
Is supposed to do what he's paid to do.
Exactly. We
yeah.
all know that. We all
but
know that. We say.
And as a lawyer, he's going to try to get as much money for his, you know.
We know that too. We all see the scoundrel within him, and we just like this is ridiculous. We all see that, and you know, my realtor, she's giving whatever she's got to give up because, I mean, we're also telepathic and psychic with each other, and we understand. But I've needed to get out of this situation because. I've been the caretaker of this property, and it has been growing with leaks, and I just want to leave it behind.
Mm-hmm.
So I put out a prayer in January, and we put it on the MLS by January 24th, and bam, I've over 100 people been looking at it because
wow.
of that. Yeah, so it's very popular, and it's prime location, and it's a one-of-a-kind, and this guy's a one-of-a-kind. So it's a match made in heaven.
Yeah, it does definitely feel like there's a bit of a stagnation in that location for you. So, I mean, getting the opportunity to have a new buyer in and, you know, being able to move yourself out of that, you know, location is probably going to be a real
freeing
boost to you as well.
Freeing is the word.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I'm tuned into spirit, and every day, like today, I just attacked my studio and just started getting rid of all this stuff, and then I found out I can give it to all the children who are doing rethink and reuse in school, so they're going to be able to work with all my extra stuff
oh,
to be
great.
Creative. Yeah, so,
always
you know,
Always a good thing to be able to pass on your tools to someone else.
Yeah, exactly, but I'm pretty much living day by day. I mean, I always have, so I just wanted to see if you got a hit on him, and okay, confirmation.
Yeah, it's looking really good. Let me do really quickly a Wheel of Life, a Celtic cross. I'm not seeing anything bad. I really am not. I'm just seeing the warnings about making sure that, you know, your backside is nice and safely warm because it's covered for the future, okay?
Thank you.
So just double check, you know, and I understand you're going through a realtor, and I understand, but remember
Plus,
that,
she's a lawyer.
Know,
she's a real estate lawyer, so she
And
knows
I understand
everything.
That. The warning that I'm trying to give you Convey. Is that lawyers are expert in breaking other lawyers' say contracts. Okay? If the lawyer for him is the one that is throwing up barriers to this, he's doing it for a reason. Okay? And it's probably I mean, I don't know, and I'm not going to try to speculate at why, but, you know, he's going to have a motive to try to, you know, get out of this or break out of it or something along those lines. So I just want you to be, you know, cognizant of that, aware of that, and make sure and double-check everything. You know, not your lawyer or the real estate lawyer. Your real estate lawyer is going to mess you over because I'm not getting that indication.
Okay.
But I'm getting that it could, down the line, come back on you. Okay?
Okay. Well, he's changed the contract 5 times already.
Of course.
You know, the whole time, my husband and I going, you got to be kidding. Okay, well, so we're playing the game up and down, up and down, up and down, and then finally we said, this is it.
Right.
So after today, and then he throws in one more loophole, and so we had a talk, and we said, if it comes in less than this dollar amount, we're not budging. And if he doesn't want to take it, then goodbye, just like that. Mm-hmm. And if we say this is where we're standing firm, and he hems and haws, and then he says, okay, I'll take it. So that's where we're at. We're at a place of standstill now, of no more juggling, no more working with you. Right.
Yeah. Okay, anything else?
All right. No, and see, this new place that I'm moving into is something I've owned since 1990, but I'm fixing it up finally for myself.
Excellent.
Oh, excellent.
So my husband's working in another state. I want it, and he's just going with the flow. And do you see him, like, moving back here?
Your husband?
Yeah.
It's possible, but there's going to be difficulties.
For what?
Let's see. Hang on, I'm doing the shuffling and the laying out of the spreads. Like I was saying earlier tonight, one of the cards that's come up is the Seven of Rods.
Right.
And so it's going to be a matter of him standing his ground. All right. I did a 5-card layout, and the 5 cards that came up from left to right, which is all the past to future, is 4 of Rods, the Star, the 7 of Rods, the 2 of Rods, and then Justice, okay?
All right.
Read as a timeline, y'all had a wonderful relationship. You've been together. He's gone to other places.
Yeah.
He's put his energy out there. Now it's gotten to a point of he's having to stand firm where he's at because now it's starting to come at him more, okay?
Right. Well, I want him to stay where he is. I don't want him
right.
to come back.
No, the two of rods is, okay, you've got a choice between spiritual and physical here, and in this case it's do I go home or do I stay here? And in the far future you've got getting what you deserve, okay?
Yeah.
So if he stands his ground, I'm pretty sure that everything's going to work out. You're going to get exactly what you should have. And, you know, karmically and through the job and everything like that.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, I'm not seeing any complications with that, okay?
Well, I want him to stay where he's doing what he loves, and I do what I love. And we run in parallel. You know, mm-hmm. we have a very unusual kind of marriage, and I really don't want him to come back. I want to, like, separate, period. I just want it to keep flowing apart.
Okay.
All right.
And that's where the Star is for me.
Okay.
Fair enough.
So I can relate to that. I will take it the way it is.
Excellent.
I want to thank you, Eileen, for calling in tonight.
Thank you both very much. I appreciate that. And have a continued good night.
You
thank
too.
You. You too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. It was wonderful. I always like being able to give people good news. Okay. Well, unless we have another caller, I was going to talk a little bit about the process for reading. Like I said, what I do is while I'm shuffling the cards, I'm thinking about the question that the person has asked. A lot of times... This happens to me more than it does to a lot of people that I know, but that they'll try to trick me up. They won't give me specifics in the question. They'll say, oh, tell me about what's gone on in the past few weeks and make me have to, you know, really dig in with the psychic powers and try to figure out what they're talking about. And in those cases, it's not necessarily that they're trying to trick me. I think they're trying to see how legitimate I am. And this is going to happen with anybody. Anybody who does readings is going to get the person who wants to find out whether it's all hooey or whether it's real. And they want to find out your level of honesty as well. For example, I was going to go do a reading for a teacher of my daughter's, and she was, or, and he, when I sat down with him, he handed me this coin that he had in his pocket and told me, what did you get off of that? And after holding it for a couple of minutes, I was like, look, I'm not getting anything off of it. There's, you know, next to nothing there. Sorry, it's, you know, I don't know why, but he's like, oh, it's good because I just picked it up 2 days ago. So it wasn't anything that, you know, he had or that he was trying to get me to do a reading from. It's that he was trying to see if I would be honest and say that I wasn't getting something when I wasn't, or if I would try to bullshit him by saying, oh, it's got all this mystical energy, you've had this for years, and, you know, whether I was going to be a real reader or a charlatan, essentially.
Hi, Joy. Sorry to interrupt, but there's a caller named Rose Maria who kind of wants a general reading. So we're on live right now.
No problem.
Hi, Rose Maria. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, hon. How are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Doing okay. I take it you've been listening through the night?
Yes.
Okay. What can we do for you tonight?
Reading or whatever you can pick up coming my way.
Okay. You just want a general future reading?
Yes. Relationship or whatever you can pick up.
All right. No problem.
Or any changes coming my way.
Let's see. What have we got for Rosemary? That's interesting. You're just starting out on a new path, and it's interesting. Okay, I did another 5-card timeline reading, and what I'm showing is in the far past you've got the Emperor, an older gentleman who has been a big influence in your life. In the near past you've got the Sun, which is a baby riding on the back of a Shetland pony, essentially, under a very pretty sky. And then you've got the Page of Cups, which is a young girl who's just starting to discover her depth of spirituality and emotions. And then in the near future, there's the Ace of Pentacles, which is interesting. And in the far future, we've got the Ten of Cups, which is a happy, emotionally stable family. So looking at it this way, what I'm seeing is that you recently started a new aspect of your life. It's something that was encouraged by somebody in your past, probably a father or father figure. And it's just coming around to where you're starting to feel comfortable with it, and things are starting to come together. But it's still very tentative still. This is going to lead to an opportunity to, I would say, increase your financial wealth, but that's not the wealth that this is talking about. It's more a richness of your life. And that's going to lead to a lot more stable home life, okay? One that's a lot more satisfying for you, okay?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I think so.
You think so?
From my past, he'll come back sooner and lead me to where I want to be. Because I wanted to make sure I'm capable of doing it, right?
Okay. All right. Anything else?
that right or wrong?
I'm sorry, you're breaking up now.
I said, I guess whatever was in my past is coming back. Just he wanted to make sure I'm going right forward, I guess.
Mm, okay. Yeah, that would make sense, the context, wouldn't it?
All right, cool.
Okay.
Thanks
you're
for calling
welcome.
In, Rosemaria.
Okay, so those were two of the calls, and we still have half an hour to fill. So is there anyone else out there?
Not so far.
Okay. Well, like I said, the picking of the spread that you're going to do for interpretation, that's a matter of experience, and it's something that you can come to after you've read for a little while. But if you got to start with the understanding of what the spreads are trying to tell, okay? And that's going to determine which spread that you use. I've got about five basic spreads that I use. One is the five-card reading, like I said, and that's either a yes, no, or it's a timeline. Then I use the Celtic Cross as a general spread for somewhat complex answers, not really complex, but, you know, ones that take a little bit of interpretation because it not only tells you about the person and the situation, but it also tells you about the time right around it, and it also gives you commentary on what's going on that they may not be aware of. Another spread that I use a lot is called the Life Choices spread, and if you want to see it as a climbing vine, where there's two branches where you can make alternate choices. That's essentially what that is. The first card is now. The next card is the near future. The third card is the first choice. The fourth card is the first branch where you could have made a different choice, and this is what would have happened had you done that. But the main branch where you continue laying out the cards at starts with the fifth card, and that's what occurs after that choice. And that leads to another choice after another card, I think, that you have somewhere in the future, which tells you at that point the two main choices from there. Okay, and that's what I give to, you know, when it's kind of up in the air. The person's got a lot of projects going on. They don't know what's happening. The next spread I tend to use a lot is what's called the bondage spread, and this is one that I invented. If any of you out there listening to this are into kinky sex, then you'll realize what a St. Andrew's cross is. But it looks like a big X. And you lay it out as the left hand, left foot, right foot, the head and the torso. And there's two cards in each position, and you interpret them based on bodily positions. Left hand is negative influences in your life. Right hand is positive influences. Left foot is the base of the situation that is negatively influencing this. The right is the ones that are in positive. The head are the blocks that you have brought into place by thinking them there. The two in the body are the ones that the blockages that your heart has brought into being. And then you reinterpret them vertically so that the two pieces on the left are together, the two in the center are together, the two on the right are together, and then there's a commentary that goes along with that. And this tends to bring up what is stopping you in various points of your life at that point. And it seems to work really, really well. It works especially well for spiritual matters, believe it or not, even though BDSM is very much a physical activity. The last spread that I tend to use uses every single card in the deck. It's called the Astrological Spread, and it comes out of the Golden Dawn. Essentially, imagine the astrological zodiac wheel that you get in an astrological reading where they map out the planets and everything, but it has the houses, and Each house means a specific thing, and then you deal every single card in the deck out to each house, and then pick up the stack and read those cards given the interpretation of the house that they're laying in. For instance, Capricorn tends to be about psychic abilities, and there's usually about six cards in there in the Capricorn house. You would look at those six cards, and you would interpret them in relationship to the psychic abilities of the person that's asking it. And it's an extremely accurate reading for giving somebody a lot of detail about their life, a lot of things that they may not always understand or realize. But it also takes an hour and a half to do. So it's one of those spreads that I don't do very often. Which brings us to another point, charging for your readings. This is really one of those ethical conundrums that a lot of people have problems with. I don't know how it is in a lot of Christian churches or a lot of faith paths for like Jewish or Hindu or something like that, but I know in the pagan religions there is an aversion to selling your gifts. You don't sell your healing. You don't sell going out and doing a ritual at somebody's house to cleanse it. You don't charge money for doing a circle. And I understand why that's there. It's because it cheapens the gift, okay? And it can lead to a situation where you're selling indulgences, like the Catholic Church used to do, selling forgiveness, and you're charging for things that should be able to be done by the person themselves for themselves. However, my argument in that is that this is your energy. This is your skill. This is your experience. This is something that hopefully you have been training for years and honing and learning and advancing the skill. And you are taking your personal energies, your personal meditations, the diet that you've been on for the last week to cleanse your body, and you are using it to somebody else's benefit, okay? An exchange of energy at that point is necessary and fair, in my opinion, okay? The energy exchange in that point, however, can come from a monetary remuneration. It's the easiest energy exchange because, like I said earlier, you have a person who's gone out, they've spent their skills, they've used their time, their gasoline, and whatever going to work, and they've used their skills and their knowledge and their continuing education to somebody else's benefit, and they've been remunerated by a little piece of paper, okay? They've taken that paper down to the bank, and the bank has said, okay, well, this is worth X amount of whatever, and you can go out and buy this stuff. And merchants accept this stuff in exchange for goods that they have. Okay, but it is still their energy. They are the ones that converted their internal abilities into a physical something so that they can give it to someone else to get what they need. If they need you to do this ritual for them because they have no clue how to drive a malignant spirit out of their house and they're trying to sell it like Irene was doing, then I would think that it would be eminently fair to have an energy exchange in the form of money. Okay. Now, a lot of people don't agree with me on this. Most of the pagan population, a lot of the high priestesses and a lot of the high priests understand this concept and have no problem charging. There's many, however, who don't, and they think that money is, you know, the root of all evil and that it just makes things worse and that we shouldn't charge for anything. But that energy exchange still needs to take place. Okay? You need to get something back for what you are doing. Otherwise, first off, it cheapens your gift. It cheapens your abilities, and you feel like no one values what you do because no one does. There's no value that's set on it. And another thing, it's human nature to scorn what we get for little to no value. We don't pay attention.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's another one of those rules that applies through acquisition of your assorted magical tools and so on as well. I mean, if you're going to bicker over the price and not willing to pay what's being asked, then, you know, it cheapens the value in your own head.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
You know, and but if you go out and you spend, you know, $100 that you worked and slaved for a car, you're going to treat that thing like it's made of gold. At least I did. So, you know, when it comes down to it, if you're selling your skills in the tarot or skills in the in doing whatever blessings or priestly duties or whatever, then, you know, there needs to be something that comes back. A lot of people come to the conclusion of being able to sell, in air quotes, their gift through somebody coming in and doing something for them. Let's say you go to their house and you sit down and you do a reading, and it's a long, complex one, and a week later they happen to be talking to you and you're like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't have time to cut my yard. And they will come over and cut your lawn for you in exchange for your reading. And that's perfectly acceptable. Okay, chore for chore, it's a barter system, it's been working since the beginning of time, and it's something that can continue to work. The monetary recompense, in my opinion, is a continuation of the barter system, because if you look at it from the perspective of you have this skill, you use this skill for the betterment of the people that you're working for, and they reward you with something that you can take in exchange for something that you need from somebody else. That takes out that takes out the direct, I'm using my skill for this farmer so that he will give me a pail of milk, and converts it into something that everybody agrees is a way of exchanging and understanding that this is my energy that I am giving to you for something I need. Okay? So if you go into it with that attitude, selling your selling a reading is not a big thing anymore. I would get a little confused if somebody were to, say, go to a hospital to heal a sick child and demand payment before they did that, especially if it was a high priest of the coven. I would think that was a little squirrely, but I would see nothing wrong with the parents of that child coming over and doing some light cleaning around the house or making her a meal. That is exactly the same thing. It's just in a different format.
I mean, in Ouse the Truth, that the idea is expressed as gift for gift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of a necessary thing to exchange energy, you know, in order to receive it. Because that's, I mean, both a hospitality issue as well as kind of the way nature works, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is no receiving without giving.
True. And, you know, even more than that, anytime, you know, if you want to look at it from another point of view, there is no altruism in nature when you simply sit and look at it. Any time an animal does something for another animal, the expectation there is that when they need it, they will have that resource available to them. This monkey shares a banana with another monkey. Well, the first monkey is doing that in anticipation that somewhere down the line, when they're hungry, the other monkey is going to share their food. And
precisely.
This is normal. This is the way nature operates. So if we're a nature religion, why not operate on a natural level? I mean, that's something that's just confused the living crud out of me. You've got animals that are doing things for each other all the time in the expectation that they will, you know, be able to reap that benefit later. But then you come along with a concept of, no, you must give your metaphysical energy away because of some archaic line out of a poem from the 1950s. And it's like, what? Where? Huh?
Yeah,
how can you justify this?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that, you know, there are arbitrary rules that have been invented to kind of suit modern temperaments. But in actual fact, I mean, if you look at the examples given in nature as to how, you know, energy exchange works and that sort of thing, I mean, there is no giving without receiving. I mean, it just is that way. I mean, there's no, every social animal makes a concerted effort to give with the expectation of receiving in the future.
And even in cases where it looks like the animal is being absolutely altruistic, that they get no benefit from it, understand that the benefit is not necessarily a one-for-one exchange. It could be enlightened self-interest. I mean, self-interest is one of the biggest things that humans miss in other animals all the time. Because here's a pod of dolphins who help this swimmer to shore. Okay? That's great. That does absolutely nothing for the pod of dolphins. They help somebody to the shore. That's wonderful. That's fantastic. But the enlightened self-interest says that by them helping this swimmer to the shore, this swimmer is going to tell people that this pod of dolphins helped them, and it's going to be less likely that this pod of dolphins is going to be hunted by other people when that story's told. Or that if they're being attacked by a shark, that it's possible that the humans will come and assist them to get rid of the shark. It's spreading goodwill. Okay?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. You do hear stories about dolphins killing sharks, and it's not always in the interest of, you know, random diver X who just happened to be in the water at the same time. It can sometimes be a matter of protecting their own young or what have you. I mean, people tend to interpret everything from a perspective of, you know, it's all for our own benefit. You know, there's no other possible reason anyone could ever be doing something. It's always a very selfish delusion almost that everything is happening because we're special, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All of the world functions to benefit me. And it's like, well, no. If you look at a greater view of the, you know, of the picture that's unfolding, I mean, what benefited you for that moment may actually have been an entirely unrelated event that,
mm-hmm.
you know, you just happened to benefit from.
Yeah. And I think it's wonderful how self-centered humanity is, thinking that we are the only beneficiaries of anything that happens. And that's complete and utter BS, in my opinion. We're not the only organisms on this planet. We have the most technological ability to harm this planet. But we're not the only beneficiaries of things that are happening. I think George Carlin came up at some point with the point that God probably didn't invent plastic, but he invented us who invented plastic, because it's possible that God wanted plastic to exist. And so,
yeah, for sure. I like that analogy, actually, because, you know, it's kind of like we assume that we've done something brilliant with inventing plastic, but in fact, it may actually be that the natural world had us evolve for the purposes of creating plastic, not necessarily for our benefit, but simply because it wanted plastic to exist.
Yeah, and I think he was roundly despised for that one for a while after he said it in a concert.
That's one of his best bits. I mean, if you look up George Carlin on YouTube, he's hysterical. It's really sad that he's no longer with us, but that is one of his better commentaries. He makes a lot of brilliant observations. So if you're not familiar with George Carlin, we've joked about required reading, but I don't know. If you don't know George Carlin's comedy and, you know, have an appreciation for it, I'm going to jokingly say you have to watch that stuff or you can't watch or listen to our show anymore.
Especially if you really want to get a perspective on possessions. Listen to his bit on shit and stuff.
Oh, I love that.
That is great, isn't it? There's an entire one thing he says in there, and it's just so perfect, is that there's an entire industry out there dedicated to taking care of your stuff.
That's very true. I mean, we've got industries for storing our shit, you know, like all of this has come about as a result of the consumer drive to possess shit.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
you know,
okay, and back to charging for readings, because I wanted to make this point. Talked about the morality of doing it and the fact that I don't have a problem with it. Anytime you actually get a reading from somebody else, even if it's just, you know, a penny, give them something. You can go out and buy a pizza and bring it home for them, because it shows them that you value what you received, okay? And I'm not talking, there's no way that you guys can pay me for these readings or these lessons or whatever, but spreading it around, talking about it, telling others that, you know, we've got these readings and that we do these shows, that would help, you know, and that's a way to pay us back and to pay it forward to other people. The teaching that I'm doing now is payback for all the teaching that I received while I was a new pagan, a baby pagan, and everybody who helped me along the path. So that's another way to pay it back, is to pay it forward. Okay. Now, if you do actually want to charge money for these, I got to tell you, the going rate is about $1 a minute. Okay.
Joy, we have another caller for a reading.
Oh, excellent.
And we have about 10 minutes worth of show left. So here's Erica.
All right. Erica, hey, how you doing?
Come on. Okay,
Erica?
There you go. Hi, Erica.
Hi.
Hello. What's going on?
How are you guys? Nothing. How are you guys doing?
Well, if you've been listening, you know. What can we do for you?
I don't know. I just wanted to do a tarot reading, I guess.
Okay. And what do you want to know?
I just want to know what next steps to take with my life, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Okay. No problem. Let me get these laid out. This is going to be Celtic crossbred, because this is a good general reading. Let's see. Oh, wait a second. Nope, gather the cards up, come on. And shuffle them, because that has nothing to do with you, that has everything to do with us. So, all right, here we go. You feel like you've been in a situation where you're kind of in a state of stasis, because you've got so much in your life and you should be satisfied with it, but and it looks like you're satisfied with it, and you feel like you should be satisfied with it, but there's a lot of stuff that is happening in the background that you're not telling people. And it's making you feel like you're holding on to secrets, a lot of secrets. Let's see. It makes it look to everybody around you like you're fighting for absolutely no reason. Or no, that's how you feel. I'm sorry. You feel like you've been fighting a lot for no reason, doing and being, and everybody else is seeing you actually getting to a point where you can start succeeding, but you haven't actually taken that first step yet. Now, this is interesting. The hindrance that's come up is you're up nights worrying about this. And there's absolutely no reason for you to be worried about it. I'm not seeing anything that's stopping you from succeeding and from continuing on with your life. It's just you feel like you're betraying everybody. And the actual fact is that you're not. Okay, what you're doing isn't causing everybody else heartache and grief, and it's you are doing what you are doing, but you're sending the energy and the results out into another area, and eventually those are going to come back to you. You're just not seeing it right now because it is a time in the future when that's going to come back. Okay. So my advice at this point is to keep doing what you are doing, okay, because you are going to reap rewards for it later. It's not going to be immediate, okay? It is going to be sometime down the road, okay? And I just double-checked this, and the problem is that you are very, very focused on what you are doing, and you're not seeing the end result, okay? So you're going to be all right, all right?
All right. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Thank you for calling, Erica.
Have a good night.
Okay. Bye-bye. And
we have about, we have about 7 minutes left of the show, so.
All right. Well, anyway, as I was saying, the going rate's about $1 a minute, which translates into, you know, $60 an hour, which is not outrageous. If you were calling into a psychic answer line or one of the infomercial things that you see, that's about what you'd be paying. Actually, you'd be paying a heck of a lot more because they're $4.50 a minute.
Wow, are they really?
Yeah, they are. The readers only get about 50 cents of that, by the way. Because, like I said, I used to do that for a living, for extra money. And it was fine as long as you had the calls there, but the problem was is that they had everybody get on the service and nobody got calls when they would do the big infomercials, and they wouldn't get nearly the volume that they were planning on. and I got actually 15 cents a minute from a $2.50 a minute service. A dollar a minute is, you know, $10 for 10 minutes of worth of reading, that's nothing. That's, you know,
definitely
minor.
I mean, you'll pay a lot more at a psychic fair or what have you if someone decides they're going to offer readings.
Mm-hmm.
The scale varies so much in a personal reading.
Oh, yeah. And it depends on entirely upon how complex the reading is. I mean, I've got readings that I sell through my website. A 3-5 card reading is like $15, where the astrological reading that I was talking about earlier is $90, you know. And I think those are pretty fair because of the amount of energy that goes into it.
Yeah, sure.
Next week, we're going to be talking about the eights. We're also going to be talking about the next two major arcana. And
both of us are like, Flip, find them.
Yeah. What are they? They're here. The devil and the tower.
Yeah.
Okay. Two of the big negative cards that a lot of people
hate.
They're
so fascinating. I love them.
They are. They're very, very interesting once you actually start studying them. And also, I'm going to try to remember to mention something else, but I don't remember what it is now.
I'm going to try to remember to mention...
Something that I forgot about mentioning. No, it was something about the readings and... energy put into readings. Dorothy Morrison, when I was talking with her and taking her tarot class, was talking about how readers tend to get very, very drained during back-to-back-to-back readings, and that's because they're not getting anything back from the clients energy-wise, and they're putting out a lot of energy. And I'm going to try to remember to talk and pontificate on that specific problem and how to overcome it when you are doing readings. So I guess we've got, 4 minutes left? I guess this is a good place to end it, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. So, folks, if you want to get a hold of us, if you want to call in for a reading during the show, the number is 646-564-9966. Obviously, we won't be doing that until next week. If you want to email me with questions, last week I was talking to a listener about Greek mythology and Wicca and all kinds of crazy stuff. You know, if you want to email for book recommendations or anything like that, you can hit me up at woodwose, woodwose.radio@yahoo.ca. Joy, if you want to reach her and ask her a question or something, or you want to arrange a reading, you know, through her website or, you know, just through her.
You can get a hold of me at joy.a.philip, two L's, no S, at gmail.com. Or I also have a link to a email form on my website, and that's erinsjournal.com, erinsjournal.com.
And also, if you want to hit Facebook, Woodwose Radio has a like page now. I mean,
oh, cool.
It's since the beginning, because I don't know, I just figured I'd create one. So yeah, look us up. Same spelling as the email address, Woodwose Radio. Check us out on Facebook. I've been kind of lazy about updating things, so, you know, forgive me for that, but, you know, if you want to hit me with a message there, you can do that as well.
We're also both on Tumblr. I'm at wide-worlds-joy at .tumblr.com. He's at cosmic-rebirth.tumblr.com. We love chatting with people. I'm on there quite a lot, so, you know, we don't bite hard unless you like it, and then, you know, you should definitely send us your email so that I can
talk to you. Ah, yes. Beyond that, next week...
I threw you off your game. That's excellent. All right. Until next week, everyone. Y'all take care.
Have a great night. See you guys soon. Good
Bye.
Night.